And of course, you are going to take your phone calls next. Craig Hines, our guest, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Craig Hines, we're going to take your phone calls as well. Craig, I got to believe you do get into some heated arguments with people who believe in Genesis as opposed to what you believe in.
I suppose, but in generally it's not so much a confrontational argument or anything like that. But
I mean, I'm not saying they punch you out or you swing at them or anything.
Yeah, it's just that I tend to see things a different way, and I'm not saying that other people are wrong or that I'm right. It's just that I really think that people need to change their perspective on this, because I think that we've been going about looking at this the wrong way. And so that if we can just change our perspective a little bit, I really think that our eyes will be opened.
What do you mean by we can become ancient astronauts? How can that be?
Well, I don't say that we become ancient astronauts, because I don't necessarily subscribe to the ancient astronaut theory, but I would say that it's up to us. We can become like the angels or like the gods, because that's what all these texts seem to indicate, is that's our true purpose, is that we're here for a time, but essentially in the end it's up to us, and we're supposed to ascend and move on and maybe become just like the other beings, and then maybe be ambassadors to other dimensions just like how they were to our own.
Are you afraid of dying?
No, not really. I mean, I don't want to, because I still have so many things I'd like to do.
Absolutely. We got to embrace life as long as you can.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not that I tend not to focus on those negative things, and I try to live my life and, you know, be moral and think of everything, enjoy the people around me, and just have a positive life.
But do you see it as a stepping stone for growth when you pass on?
Everything that happens, I mean, it depends on how you react to it. I mean, whenever something bad happens, I mean, you can get upset about it and dwell on it, or you can just take it as a lesson learned and move on and keep going that way throughout the rest of your life. And I think, you know, that's a good attitude to take.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go east of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Ponca City, Oklahoma. Thank you, George, for taking my call. I used to listen to the shortwave sometimes, and there was an organization on there that talked about, I think it was a god maybe named Yahweh, and I was just wondering if that name has ever come up in your studies, and if so, could you tell us a little bit about it, or where it comes from, which god is that? Does it have anything to do with a Christian god?
Yes, certainly the name Yahweh comes up in my research, and I have a whole chapter about the significance of the names within the Bible. And basically, Yahweh is the name that is attributed to the God of Israel, the Most High God. And I please forgive me, any devout Jewish listeners that might be offended that we're actually pronouncing the name, because it's considered so sacred that you're not supposed to pronounce it. But there's a lot of lore tied to it that if you actually knew the power of the name and were able to pronounce it correctly, that either all of the world would end or it would grant immense powers to whoever knew that. And I do think that that's part of the reason why, in the story of the Tower of Babel, why it said that they wanted to make a name for themselves. It wasn't just for renown or anything, but I think that the name of God played a role in how to activate these gateways, because, as I said, the leader of the angels, whenever they came here, his name was Shem Yaza, and Shem in Hebrew means name.
Do you believe those pyramids that you said were probably used as these teleporters, these transporters, were they built with that in mind from the get-go?
I think so. I think if you go back and study the structure of many of the pyramids, many times what they did, they originally started out as mounds. And if you go into Europe, they refer to the fairy mounds, which were supposed to be gateways to the realm of the fairy. And even in Mesopotamia, they started out as mounds, and they would continually build them up over time, and eventually you got the pyramid structure. But the whole time they always referred to these mounds or sacred pyramids as the gateways to heaven. And I think that it's not so much the structure that actually granted access to heaven, but maybe there was something with that location, or there was a gateway located there, and every time they'd build up the pyramid, they would just elevate the gateway a little bit more at the top.
I have not heard you talk about Adam and Eve tonight. How come?
Well, I mean, I could. It just doesn't play entirely into my theories. In what context would you like to talk about them?
I mean, do you believe that they were the first? Were they some of the dimensional beings that came here? What do you think they were?
Well, it depends on how you want to take that, because in the Bible there's two different versions of the Genesis story with creation. And initially it's actually said that there were multitudes of people that were created. It wasn't just one man and one woman. So it depends on which story you want to take. I mean, and they serve different functions, but I don't know if I quite put it in that I believe in the created humans. I mean, I can't rule out that possibility, but I see no problem with the evolutionary theory.
Okay, West of the Rockies, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Hello. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, this is Paul Stewart.
All right, Paul, it's yours.
Hey, George, it's great to talk to you, buddy.
Thanks.
I was wondering if your guest has ever heard of Patrick Harris, if he was familiar with his works at all.
Patrick's been a great guest here on Coast to Coast. Greg?
Yeah, actually, I am quite familiar with Patrick Harris's work, and that's another thing where I sometimes get into arguments with people, because while I don't have anything against Patrick, whenever I read his one of his newest books, The Nephilim and the Pyramid of the Apocalypse, I was at first intrigued, especially because he was talking about the Nephilim in relation to the pyramids and for that matter. But whenever I started looking through his data, I found a lot of it that just doesn't add up. Basically, he's using he lists some figures for the Great Pyramid, which have been debunked since 1898. So they're inaccurate measurements that he provides for the Great Pyramid of Giza. And then on top of that, whenever you actually use some of the mathematical calculations that he provides in just the first couple pages of his book, he misplaces decimal points. He rounds numbers up, rounds other numbers down, and calls them equal and things. And I don't consider that completely honest. And I don't know whether he just didn't check it or not, but I know there's a new edition of the book out, and I checked it, and the same errors and other mistakes are in there. So I really don't know, but I don't believe his theories at all, because he makes some basic mistakes with just general math.
All right, well, that is interesting to hear that, actually, so I appreciate that. George, just to let you know, man, I'm in a band, and when I'm not, I'm doing delivery routes all night long. You've kept me awake and alive many a time, so I appreciate it.
Many more moons to come here, Paul.
Yes, sir. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, next up, let's go to our wild card line. You're up with Craig Hines. Hi.
Yeah, Brian from the from Portland.
Yeah, Brian.
So I was just wanted to call in. I love your show. And I just wanted to kind of make a statement about Genesis and everything. And one point that I wanted to point out was just the whole evolutionary theory, and that it is theory and not fact, and no one's really been able to prove it. And I think Darwin said it best himself in his book, Origin of the Species. I don't have the page number or the reference on me, but he said himself that if in the future we ever find that the cell is more complex than we understand now, and now being when he wrote the book,
right,
when he came out with this theory, that evolution couldn't explain it. And that, you know, at his point in time, you know, basically they thought that the cell was just a ball of ooze, and they didn't understand all the bits and pieces and complexities of it, that if you take any part of the cell away, the whole thing dies and it couldn't even happen. So that's my argument for the evolutionary theory anyways.
Well, and he was tipping. He was tipping toward creationism, wasn't he?
Yeah. I think he actually converted on his deathbed. My other thing that I want to talk about is that, you know, you always hit on how, you know, we have pyramids and all sorts of civilizations and these common threads throughout history in different societies. You know, when in the Bible, when God destroyed the Tower of Babel, he also talked about splitting up the people and breaking them up and giving them different languages, which I think would be evidence enough of why we would have this common thread throughout history of these same stories. You know, if the people were broken up at a point in time, it would only make sense that they would take their knowledge and everything with them and expand from that point.
What's your take on this, Craig?
Well, I mean, I'd have to agree with part of that. In the Tower of Babel story is generally considered to be a negative event, but whenever you go back and read it, the reason why God says that they shouldn't be able to do that is because he doesn't want them to become as powerful as the rest of the divine council. The same thing happens with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. Whenever they take and eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, what does God say? He banishes them and so that they can't eat from the tree of life. And because he says that otherwise they'll be as powerful as we are. And the same thing happens with the story of the Tower of Babel. And he says, well, we've got to put a stop to this. But then whenever you go back and read, you know, things like the New Testament, it keeps referring to how this story about how we need to return to the Babel, the gateway of God, and that if we can do that, then we can reach heaven and we can reach the tree of life, but that's with God's blessing this time. It's just that we weren't ready for it back at that time. But there are obvious connections to it because, like I was mentioning about Jacob's ladder, and it says about the gate of heaven, and he saw the angels ascending and descending. Jesus himself says in the New Testament that surely you will see heaven opened and you will see angels ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. So he's making a direct parallel to the story of Jacob's ladder, which is again referring to these ziggurats with the gateways.
Would you debate Patrick Heron on this program?
I might. I mean, it's one of those things. I really don't want to have any beef with him personally. It's just that...
Hey, it's honest debate.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that I looked at his research and just the first couple pages, I really had to scratch my head because I'm looking at it and going, how he uses this to base all the rest of his theories on it, and the math is wrong, or, you know, there's another part where he mixes up Hebrew and Latin, which, I mean, could be a basic mistake, but, like I said, the math, I'm sorry, I can't really forgive that because he makes several mistakes in the same areas, and on top of that, anyone just spending 5 minutes of research on the Great Pyramid and the measurements of it would find out that the measurements that he's using have been debunked since 1898 by Sir Flinders Petrie.
First time caller line, your turn. Hi there.
Hey, George. Adam from Granville, Michigan.
Hey, Adam. Thanks for calling.
I was just wondering if Craig has seen the movie. He just made a comment about the Jewish God whose name can't be pronounced or shouldn't be pronounced. It was called Pi, like the number Pi. It's kind of a low-budget film. It was about this guy that found a mathematical pattern in Pi, which shouldn't have any kind of pattern. It goes on forever.
When did it come out, Adam?
I want to say in 1998.
Ah, right. 10 years ago, almost.
Yep. It was, anyways, this guy finds this pattern, and then this stock agency is after him because they found a way to find patterns in the stock market, and then these Jewish studiers are trying to find the name of God that is supposed to be given to the chosen one or whatever, and it comes up with this like 314 number result out of pi, and that's supposed to be the name of God, and it goes really deep. The cover of the movie is the actual symbol pi.
The movie has to do with a paranoid mathematician searching for a key number that will unlock the universal patterns found in nature. I don't know if you saw that. I didn't.
Yeah, I did see that movie. It was many years ago, but I believe that's a film by Darren Aronofsky, who's done other movies like Requiem for a Dream.
I did see it. I think that the caller did a good job of recapturing what all happened, because I know my memory was a little hazy on it, but I do remember seeing that, and it was quite an interesting movie. But it, as he said, it is sort of a low budget. I believe it was all in black and white, and it had some very unique camera angles in it, too.
Yeah, you are right. You are right. Had to do, based in Manhattan, Max Cohen, a mathematician, computer whiz, starts staring at the sun at the age of six. He's had terrible headaches, but he can't hide his obsession with finding numeric patterns. Well,
yeah, it's certainly an interesting movie. I would recommend for people that, you know, are into sort of, I don't know if I want to call it sort of an art film, but it's definitely not like a mainstream Hollywood feature. So if you ever want something intriguing, it's definitely worth a watch.
Tell us about where you can get the book before we take this break.
Oh, sure. It's available throughout the U.S. and the U.K. You can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. If it's not at your favorite bookstore, you can ask them to order it, and they can get it in for you. Or you can order it directly from the website, gatewayofthegods.com, and I'll autograph all orders placed on the website.
Okay, when did it come out, Greg?
Actually, back in January, so it's been out for a little over 7 months now.
Tippy-toeing into the world, how's it being received?
Very good. I mean, considering, you know, that I'm an unknown author and just trying to make my way through this wonderful web of research, but everyone who has read it that's written back to me, I mean, they're basically blown away by it. And the one thing I get a lot of times is they say that it's a very slow read. It's not difficult to read, but it really forces them to stop and think about everything and watch how everything pieces together, because while it might not make sense at first, by the time they get to the end, it just, everything fits together and it just blows them away.
Well, and it's a little easier to understand the numbers that you were trying to illustrate. That's kind of difficult to comprehend, but it's easier in the book.
Yeah, I have illustrations and charts and everything like that to explain it.
Okay, again, the cover of the book, too, has these angelic figures coming down this stairway, which could be the ladder. Is this a real depiction of a real building on this planet, or did you just create that?
Well, that's based on my best understanding of what the ancient ziggurats looked like. There's a few different descriptions, but basically they're described as seven tiers, and a lot of times they were painted different colors, like the bottom two tiers were painted black.
Where was this one, for example?
Well, that one would be somewhere in the Mesopotamian region, so like ancient Iraq.
Is it gone now?
Most of them are. There are some ziggurats that are still remaining, but most of them, like the tops and everything, are destroyed. So you just have like the bottom parts of them remaining.
Crumbled away into antiquity.
Yes.
Well, all right. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. What about you, Craig? How can people email you?
Sure. Through the website, it's craig@gatewayofthegods.com.
All right. And your website?
gatewayofthegods.com.
How convenient. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take final phone calls. Fast night. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Okay, don't forget my tribute program, really a thank you program to Art Bell. That's tomorrow. The staff has worked around the clock on this one. A number of guests. I'm talking about a handful of guests. Some great classic clips, some of which, believe it or not, we couldn't find. They go back so far. Some of you sent them to us, so thank you for that. And a little song we had commissioned. I ended up writing the song, and then Rob Eisenberg put it together for us. He's our music director here at the network. And I just wanted to tell you that some of the words that you'll hear in the song, you'll go, what does that have to do with anything? Well, I needed them to rhyme. I did. So we'll be back in a moment. We'll wrap up with final phone calls with Craig Hines at Coast to Coast AM. Let's go back to Craig, and we'll take final phone calls. Craig, do you go to conferences or anything like that? I haven't seen you around.
Actually, I'd like to, but I haven't had the opportunity because I have to work a few different jobs, and a lot of times I just can't manage to travel. But actually, right now I'm sort of working on a program that might solve part of that problem for me and maybe some other people that would like to travel to these conferences, but they just can't either through because of money or they just don't have the time to travel.
Okay, and if you need help at any of these, just get a hold of Tommy, my producer here, and because he's got some great contacts with these people.
Sure, thank you.
That'll help you out. You got to get out there in the public. You got to get your name known. This program, of course, will help, but there's nothing like meeting people face to face.
Yeah, definitely. And I'd also like to say, I forgot to mention before that for the Coast audience, I'm offering free shipping on the book right now. All they need to do is either mention, if they order over the telephone, the coupon code COAST.
COAST, okay.
Or if they order through the website, just enter the coupon code COAST, and they'll get free shipping.
All right, very good. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. To the phones we go, east of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
Good. This is Calvin Blake, and I'm calling from Huntsville, Texas.
All right, Calvin.
Hi. Well, I have two questions. My first one's really quick. To Craig, what was your stance religiously? What would you say is your religious stance, if that's not too blunt? I missed the first part of the show, so I actually, you might have said it at the beginning, and I just completely missed just the basic rundown.
Basically, I have my own personal views. I don't subscribe to any one religion over another one. I'm not atheist. I don't even know if I'd consider myself agnostic. I pay respect to all religions, and it's just my way. Like, I don't really believe that I need to go to a church or anything like that. Not that I have anything against the church. It's just I feel that if I want to get closer to God,
more on a one-on-one basis, more than
walking around in nature.
I see. Okay, well, I'm an atheist myself, and, you know, I don't want to speak for all atheists, but personally, I think the concept of a world religion, of one big supernatural being, is just a product of the human design, of just the human mechanics. We have to create justice. We have to create a good and evil people. Bad people go to bad places. Good people go to good places, that sort of thing. But, With what your book writes about, now I haven't gotten the book or anything like that, so it might describe something in there, but what is your stance on say, world religion, on the concept of so many different belief systems and what happens after you die and all that kind of stuff? If, you know, the concept of right and wrong is actually a human thing, what might be the ultimate answer?
Basically, what I'm arguing is that within all these different religions, you can find the kernels of the same beliefs or the same origin, which refers back to this contact experience I'm suggesting with the angels. But I do definitely see where you're coming from, where over time, how people, they change it and adapt it to their own needs, and they start putting their own morals into it and saying, well, if you want to believe what I believe, then you have to do this, and that's wrong. I don't like what you believe. So I definitely think that over time, a lot of the religions have morphed. And it's not that they're bad, it's just that they've changed for their times and for the needs of the people throughout the ages. So what we have today is very different than the needs of somebody 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Let's go next to our wild card line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, sir.
My name is Jason, and I'm from Colorado Springs. I've talked to you many times before. Basically, great show, and I wanted to comment upon basically agreeing with the same little niche in all religious texts, is that we are created in the image and the likeness of the infinite power source of the Almighty Creator. And I believe that we are upon this, as you say, the circle square thing to create good, you know, speak good into existence. We are image and likeness, physical, breathing, compassionate beings that have the same ability as the Creator. And if things are bad, then we can create good. If we walk around thinking things are bad, then guess what? We create bad for ourselves.
Yeah, I would have to agree, because it's that attitude. Everyone always wants to focus on all the negative and all the angels that fell were bad. And they said, if you go back and read the text, not all of them were bad and not all of them were punished. It's just that what they did wasn't necessarily ordained at that time, but the overall message is that it's really up to us. They came here and they gave us the building blocks of civilization, but then they left, and it wouldn't be a challenge if they just did it all for us. It's really up to us.
Well, great show, and I encourage your studies, and I love the Coast to Coast family, and keep up the good work.
Okay, thank you. And by the way, I do need your help on one thing,
sure.
Because when they moved, not in the offices, not you, Craig, this is to the audience. When they moved the offices from Medford, Oregon, back to Los Angeles, There's some tapes that they can't find. I need the classic tape of Art when he sealed his lips shut with super glue. And if you can find it, I want you to email that to tom@coasttocoastam.com, all right? And if there's anybody out there who might have recorded that during those days, because we can't find it, it's tom@coasttocoastam.com. Let's go next. First-time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, great to get through. I subscribe to Richard C. Hoagland's point of view that there was probably life on Mars, and I think even the Book of Enoch talks about three rocks. And, of course, after the rebellion, one of them was destroyed, which I think might be the asteroid belt, and another one was destroyed, and it talks about a red rock or something like that, which could possibly be Mars. But I think there was a whole society of angelic creatures way, way, way before Adam and Eve. And I think what happened is that culture, that society fell. And not just the one-third angels that fell, but one-third probably remained pure. One-third fell completely. And the other one-third kind of sinned or perhaps or fell, but kind of repented and admitted their mistakes. And I think the Creator had to come up with a plan to perhaps redeem them and give them a second chance. And that second chance is us. In other words, that second chance is to come back as mortal beings, as animals, for lack of a better word, with souls, to be given a second chance, a test of your actual spirit, to see if you're a good spirit or a bad spirit. Because we know there's good people and there's bad people. And when the test is finally done, the good will be vindicated and allowed to re-enter the kingdom of heaven. And, of course, all those bad apples will be tossed back out. And I got to know, is there anything biblically or any kind of ancient text that kind of supports that point of view, perhaps? Because that one-third rule is out there, but I'm not sure if there's any delineation of a one-third that's kind of caught in the middle.
Well, I'm not sure specifically. I know a lot of times the one-third is referring to, in the book of Revelation, whenever it refers to the serpent that swept down one-third of the stars with him. But I know as far as like the Book of Enoch, whenever it refers to the angels coming down, it says that there were 200, so that's a different number than obviously the one-third. I'm not aware of anything specifically like that. It's a nice concept. I don't know of any text that speaks specifically of what you're describing.
Yeah, and I think that 200 there, that the Enoch, the watchers that came to help, I think those were the one-third pure ones. And, of course, I think there's probably a lesson there that even they may be pure at that one point. They came here with a specific purpose of helping their brothers or angelic brothers and wind up falling themselves in the process. At least some of them there marrying the sons of men or the daughters of men, which they were not supposed to do. And I just think it's an amazing topic there, George.
Oh, it really fascinates me all the time.
Yeah, and it's real because, like I said, I think we are the angelic creatures.
I think you're right.
And our souls are kind of put in this simulation, for lack of a better word. And I think even Greg was talking about that there's certain like programming of the word of God, the name of God, that kind of takes us to the other side. And it just sounds to me like we are kind of caught in like a computer simulation, like a matrix, and certain levels of computer language will help us switch over or cross over to that other side.
Okay, thank you. Craig, why do you side with the Book of Enoch as opposed to Genesis? I mean, why did you make that distinction?
Well, it's not that I consider one against the other one. It's just that I think actually the Book of Enoch supplements Genesis very well, because in the Book of Genesis, that's where you have the first story about the fall of the angels, which is then elaborated in the Book of Enoch. But whenever it's describing the angels coming down, it's not the story of Lucifer leading a rebellious army in heaven. It's the story about the angels coming down and mating with humans. So the Book of Enoch, it's actually older than some of the texts that are in the Bible, and you know, for many centuries it was considered, you know, a very dedicated text, and it was honored, and it was only over time, whenever church fathers and other rabbis didn't like the idea that a spiritual being could take on a physical body and interact with humans in that way, that they started dismissing the Book of Enoch and pushing it aside, and eventually it disappeared. And then it was rediscovered recently.
Next up, East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hi, George. This is Andrew from Colorado.
Yeah, Andrew. Thank you.
Hey, your guest mentioned last hour about a place, a holding place between, like, heaven and earth.
It's the underworld. It's called Sheol in the ancient text.
Okay.
It's a holding place.
I had a situation last year where I believe what happened is doctors are treating a couple different conditions, and I think some of the medicine interacted wrong, and I think I actually died, I think, and I actually went there, and I actually had an encounter with, I believe it was my cousin, and he told me to come back.
Yeah.
And the place was...
Like, do you have anything else to indicate this, or is it all...
Well, I recognized him after the fact when I came back to my body, or...
Dawned on you then.
What's that? It dawned on me. Because at first I didn't know who was talking to me, but above him, he came down onto some sort of pedestal, and some place above. There was other people there, but it was quiet, and it was kind of, it was gray. It was weird, but there was an angel. I could see him up behind who I think was my cousin, and it was kind of a weird encounter, but I just wanted to tell you that I believe that place exists, because I believe I've been there, and it's a very tranquil, quiet place, but it's like, it's hard to explain. So.
Yeah. I'm really not sure how exactly to take that, because, I mean, I think that it very much could have happened, but again, since I wasn't there, I wasn't the one that experienced it, I won't know that. And I don't mean any disrespect. I just, it's one of those things whenever, in my mind, I go, well, you said that you were in the hospital or something for it. I just want
to... I am a strong believer, though, that he could have gone to the other side.
Yeah, that very well could be. I'm just suggesting, I mean, maybe if there was some sort of medication, we don't know. So that's...
No, we don't. We really don't. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, Craig. This is Todd in Tempe. I'd like to ask you if you have any information on how many ancient texts may be being destroyed due to the U.S.'s presence in Iraq and the level of terrorism because of that presence.
I'm not sure. I didn't quite hear all the question because it kind of cut out there.
One more time.
Okay, I'd like to ask you how many ancient manuscripts may be being destroyed because of the U.S.'s presence in Iraq and the level of terrorism because of that presence.
Oh, who really knows? I mean, everything. I mean, if it was hidden away, and they could be blowing up things and never even know that there was anything there.
Yeah, we lost things during the blast into the museum. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, and they were looting it.
And they found some of it back, but not all of it.
Yeah. Some of it's been returned, but other stuff, I'm sure, made its way into private collections.
Oh, yes. The very wealthy probably bought that stuff around the world.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. Wildcard Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, this is Janice from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada.
Hi, Janice.
I have a comment and a question. Partially the comment is also to George. George, this guy knows what he's talking about. I'm a theological scholar, and he has said nothing that disagrees with any of my research or studies.
Okay.
Now, the question is, okay, in this current political/religious climate, how do you see it playing out? You know, prophecy versus, you know, just how it might play out in our own lives and how it might impact both the Christian religion and or the Muslim religion.
Well, honestly, my view is that I think that because so many people have in their heads it's one way and they're focusing on many of the negative aspects of it, we're sort of creating our own destruction by focusing on that. And I really think that if we would just take a step back, think everything through, and start looking at these texts in a different way, we'd understand that it's really up to us to turn everything around. And we don't need to just be waiting for God or these angels to return on their own. It's up to us. And I'm just concerned at times that some people are actually going about almost trying to create Armageddon, like, honestly, I know a lot of times you speak about the Illuminati and, and everyone on the show, and I really think that some of those people aren't necessarily evil. It's just that they are so sincere in their beliefs that they're actually going about trying to create Armageddon because they believe that that's what must happen for, like, the rapture and everything else to follow.
Did you ever stumble across 2012 in any of these ancient texts that you reviewed?
Yeah, definitely, especially referring to the Mayan calendar, and it refers to Venus. I kept making the significance of Venus and the symbol of kingship and the pentagram, but it also makes a transit in 2012. And so that's going to coincide with the solar flares and everything like that. So I do wonder at times, since the Mayans paid such respect to the sun as well as Venus, that maybe there is a connection there that we should be paying attention to.
Gateway to the Gods. It's available out there, Amazon.com. And you, of course, can get it for free shipping right now if you just mention COAST. That's a code word, right?
Yes.
All right, very good. Craig, thanks for the evening. Pretty controversial, my friend, but thank you.
Yeah, I knew that going in, but thank you very much for having me on the show.
Well, at least you had the guts. That's the important thing, and it's also a different perspective, and that's also very important for people, too.
Yeah, I really encourage everyone to contact me and just let me know their thoughts.
You got it. Thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
That's Craig Hines. His book is called Gateway to the Gods. For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smithy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.